Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
The shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it.
So welcome, everybody, to this latest episode of Macklin's Take with me, Andy Clark, and Matt Macklin. Macklin, how are you this fine Sunday evening?
I'm good. Can't complain at all.
No, me neither. So today we've got a episode that we've been meaning to do for quite a while. We were just kind of hoping that the four of us might all end up in the same place and be able to do this in person, but it just hasn't quite shaken out like that. And what we're talking about today is, well, it's a couple of things, really. It's life in the away corner. We've done this with Peter Buckley from a good few episodes ago now. Peter was on the circuit a while back, and today we've got two people who are very much part of it currently. But it's not just about that. It's about the fact that from what I've seen over the last few weeks at some cards I've been to, the role of the away corner fighter, it looks to me like it might have changed just a little bit. The dynamic of it seems to have changed just slightly. And the two men we've got with us, our crack squad, are Lewis Van Poch, Poochie, as he's known, one of our finest away corner fighters, and his trusty cornerman, Rich Farnan. And these two have been at it up and down the country for a good long time now. So, gents, Poochie, first of all, how did you get on last night? I know you boxed at your call last night.
Well, I got taught a boxing lesson last night. He was very good prospect, so one to look out for. Andre Descaze's name is.
I was at one of those where he started sharp and at it, and in that situation, you know that you're possibly in for a hard night.
No, really, he sort of started off as we'd expected him to do. He didn't do a lot, but what I've seen of him, he was a bit not lazy, but he liked to look for his shots rather than throw an abundance of shots, and that's exactly how it started. Very nice sharp jabs, so I had to keep my head moving and try and catch a few on the gloves. But then he sort of started going for the gears as the fight drew on, and then he just showed his class, and he's a cut above me, and he's probably got a bright future in this sport. So fair play to him.
I've got to say, like that's some room you've got there. Just for people who are listening and can't see it, there's a very well stocked drinks cabinet just over Poochie's left shoulder, and a massive TV on the bare brick wall. It's quite the man cave.
I'd like to take the credit as if it's my place, but it's not. I rent a room off my good friend Adam.
Well, he's doing you proud. He's doing you proud, Rich. So
that makes me laughing.
Rich, how are things with you?
Yeah, I'm all good, thank you, mate. I had a bit of a ill 4 weeks. Ended up in hospital for 8 days, and missed my birthday with Pooch, my missus, and a couple of other lads, which was booked for Vegas. And they wouldn't discharge me out of hospital, and they did 24 hours after we were supposed to fly. So that was just a bit of a bad time, to be fair. But like, I've got over that now, and just starting to get my fitness and my strength and my health back. So we're back on it. Still working. Still on the daily job in the gym, and then obviously out with Pooch. This is, in fact, the first fight for Pooch last night in about 6 weeks, because I think where he was sort of, getting onto the point of where the role of the journeyman or the way fighters sort of changing. I think after COVID, it definitely has, because there are less journeymen, UK journeymen, available now. Lots of lads just didn't bother to renew their licenses, didn't bother to, sort their medicals back out. So, the old brigade that we would see week in and week out in the changing rooms in the away corner is getting less and less now. And it's a real shame, because, being in the away corner and being in the away dressing room is by far the most entertaining, fun, relaxed, enjoyable side to be. Because obviously, as you know, I work with a number of other fighters, world champions and, all sorts of others, just in the corners doing cuts and whatever. And some of them, the atmosphere, or I could almost say the lack of atmosphere in the change room, is just horrific. Do you know what I mean? It's a very serious sport. Yes, you have to get in fight mode, but at the end of the day, you still need to be relaxed. You still need to be having a bit of fun, because you don't want to be wasting that nervous energy when you're getting into that ring to fight a championship fight. And sometimes, it's a dead atmosphere, and I don't like it. I like to be. I worked not that long ago. I worked, and in fact, I'm working in his corner again. I'm working his corner again this weekend. The cruiserweight, Kev Clark.
Yeah,
I mean, what a guy. I was in his changing room, and for the second I got in there, to the second we started to do the walk to the ring, it was relaxed. It was funny. He was chilling out. He was just little things like the cameras came in, and he was doing the pads with Sam. And just because the camera was there, he's throwing a jab, and he put a right hand to Sam's belly. And Sam's taking a deep breath. The camera's on. Yeah, that was great. Thanks, mate. He's walked out. Sam's like, oh, what did you do that for? He went, yeah, just see if you could take it in front of a camera. Just messing around. Then you get out of fight, and he performs. So, the away corner, the away dressing room is like this every single night. It's one of the best places to be. But I was coming on to where Pooch, first fight in 6 weeks, because journeyman that, since COVID, where the 50-50 fights were going on, they're having a bit of a go these days. And a few of these home fighters, ticket sellers we got, are getting found out. But the problem with it is, it's bad for business. Pooch is, apart from last night, his last two fights before that, he won both. Won one on points, one with a stoppage. Mm-hmm. Didn't get any work. When my diary, apart from he's out next weekend, my diary's empty. And that's, we've experienced it before in the past, where Pooch has had some wins or he's stopped somebody, and then the next five or six fights, coming up, get cancelled. But my phone normally goes off hook. It just hasn't been ringing.
Well, we'll get into that because... yeah, it is interesting what I've seen over the last few weeks. Just so people know, Matt may have to disappear for a bit during the course of the podcast. He's expecting a very important call, and I can divulge what it's about, because it's
this is extremely
interesting news. So we've realized we can exploit a loophole, because Macklin's take technically is on YouTube. You see, we never put anything on YouTube anymore, but technically it is on YouTube. So he is therefore a YouTuber. So he is awaiting call and a final contract from the Sourlands to get involved in Misfits Boxing. And the agreement is that he's going to clean all those lads up in one night. That's something for us all to look forward to.
So if he
disappears at any point, then that's why. Poochie, seriously though. I was talking to John Evans about this in Doncaster, a good pal of ours, when you won on that Steve Wood show, and there are a couple of other away corner wins. And he said to me that he'd seen an interview with Jordan Granham, who's another really good away corner fighter. And he said that there's something behind why this is happening more often now. And the reason is because some of the fighters who are turning pro now, particularly if they've come through the white collar route, some who've turned pro maybe since COVID or whatever, they're just not really good enough. And that therefore away corner fighters are looking at them and thinking, I can't lose to you for a couple of reasons. Number one, personal pride. You just think, I'm better than you. I can't lose to you. We all know the drill with the away corner. No one's going to just give a fight away, though. That doesn't happen. You know that you do your thing and it goes to the cards and it's close. You're probably not going to get it. And you accept that. But nobody goes in there just to roll over and give one away. So personal pride is one thing. And secondly, I know you lads look upon yourselves really as being kind of custodians of the sport, and that ultimately it's not going to do boxing any good for fighters like that who aren't really up to it to be allowed to prosper. And so that's why he was saying that people are coming out of the away corner, having a look for the first round, which you generally do, don't you? And then just thinking, I'm going to have to beat you, I'm afraid. And that's that's why we've had more away wins than we would get normally, maybe the last 2 or 3 months, the start of this season. I mean, did you agree with that? How does that sound?
Maybe I don't know. It's different from my perspective. It's slightly different because I've played the game for so many years, and I let everyone have their fair shake, and I lost fights where I could have won them. Partly it was that because I've not lived a proper lifestyle. I lived the Macklin lifestyle before I turned proper. I started thinking to sort myself out. I've seen the videos of you in Vegas. I've never really lived the lifestyle of an athlete. Like, very loose term, but technically journeymen are still athletes. But I never lived a clean lifestyle or anything. I drank beer at fast food whilst concurrently being an athlete. But I sort of turned a corner in my life and done a lot of growing up recently, and just turned a bit of a corner with my health and fitness, and it sort of started to show the ring. So I just started showing what I can do whilst in the ring, and not letting everyone have all their own way for a change.
And Matt, actually, one interesting thing I discovered recently is that the border control are now telling people when they turn pro, this might be going on for a few months, that they do actually need to have some amateur experience. I was talking to Alec Wilkie. He's trained loads of fighters. Great, great bloke, Alec. Operates out of Poplar. Mm. And he was saying that he had a fighter who was turning pro, who had a lot of kickboxing MMA experience, good standards, and that they thought, right, no problem. But then they were told, actually, now we want you to go away and at least have a handful of amateur fights. So maybe they've realised that the overall standard of fighters turning pro had got to a point where it wasn't where it should be. And it has to remain high, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it has to, because boxing, ultimately, it's dangerous. You know, people get knocked out, people get hurt. So you don't want anyone going in there that's completely out of their depth. And they can tell you they've done white collars, but you don't know the standard of that. But you know they've had 5 amateur fights, that they've had to go through a skills bout first, possibly, all the rest of it, that, you know, they've had 5 50-50 fights, because that's the purity of amateur boxing. You know, I say, might not work out as 50-50 in terms of ability, but it's a fight for nothing to gain except the win or loss.
They're evenly matched. As a rule, they're generally evenly matched, as even as they can be.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They definitely think they can win, or there's a chance they can win. Do you know what I mean? They're in it, you know, because I know even my club coach, I heard him talking over the years when I was a, you know, schoolboy, and that certain, it just because someone drew someone in the championships, he'd pull him out of the championships rather than throw him in out of his depth where he gets probably beaten up, stopped, disheartened, and then his confidence killed. Do you know what I mean? No one's in amateur boxing for that. Do you know what I mean? If he gets to a schoolboy final and he comes up against a really good kid, and he ends up getting stuck. Well, that's the way it goes. You're in a schoolboy final. Do you know what I mean? But you're not matching anyone. You know, do you know what I mean? You're not throwing any, no one's throwing anyone in the amateur game out of the depth, basically. So if you've had 5 amateur fights, you've boxed to a certain level already. Mm-hmm. So when you turn professional, you know what you're getting yourself into. You've been punched in the face and you didn't fold over. Do you know what I mean? And you've satisfied certain criteria that should be satisfied going into professional combat sport.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And you've got to, as well, now, because I've got a heavyweight going through that same process. He's due to have his third amateur fight next weekend. So his first couple of amateur fights, I mean, he's done white collar, but his first couple of amateur fights, there were 3-2s. So this next one are 3-3s. And this is where, again, speaking to the board, they were sort of saying, well, yeah, you can have 3 or 4 3-2s, but have a couple of 3-3s, then come and talk to us, put the application, because then you've obviously done 3-minute rounds as well. Like you say, Matt, it's exactly that. Relatively 50-50 fights, you're not matching. You know, you're taking the fights on very similar experienced some lads. And I do agree. I think that is very important now.
So would you, you know a lot more about this than me, Rich, because you go through this process and I don't. But was what I said correct, do you think, that the reason the board reverted, if you like, to saying, look, you've got to have some amateur experience is because they recognised that the standard of fighters turning over are dipped? Did you see that?
Yeah, no, I've got some very good friends that sit on the board and they did tell me. I think it happened just before the first lockdown that they'd allowed X amount of fighters from the white collar scene that had got licensed. They'd had physical assessments and whatever. And there were some that were outstanding. You know, I think I don't think Fabio Wardley, for example, had any amateur experience, and he's gone. He's like the trend. Same with Nick Blackwell. Nick Blackwell did the same. But then there was who?
And Matt McCallum, who boxed up in Newcastle.
But then there was a plethora of them that were absolutely useless. You know, and you wonder how they got their license or how they actually ever ended up being able to box, you know. And I think that sort of then reflected the board reassessing on, hang on, we can't allow this because, again, we're, as what Matt said, we're allowing fighters to be licensed and it's a very dangerous sport. And therefore, you know, the health and safety of the fighter is the number one priority, and we're putting people in that simply aren't good enough, you know. So therefore they've changed those rules. It goes a little bit deeper. I mean, they will only recognize the amateur record if you boxed for England Angling, England Boxing, sorry, because there's the alliance as well. They don't recognize the alliance whatsoever. Right. So if you've got a guy that's come from white collar and needs these amateur experience, you have to find a registered England Boxing amateur club because they won't recognise it otherwise. Which, again, that's fair.
And that's the way it should be. And because you can get 5 fights in pretty quickly if you want. If you're serious, you want to turn pro and you've got to have 5 amateur fights. It ain't that hard to get 5 quick amateur fights in.
It is when you're 6'7" and 125 kilos, though, Matt.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I suppose that, yeah.
But, yeah. Because
maybe you could bring it to 3 or something for heavyweights.
Yeah. But this is the crazy thing, because we've had a lot of fights turned down for this guy that I've got, because there's a lot of amateur heavyweights out there now that are 95 kilos. They're under 100 kilos. So they're looking at him at 125 kilos and Benny's talking, like, oh, no, we ain't going to fight him. And you know, you are classed as a heavyweight, you know. Heavyweight's heavyweight. Mm. I get it.
Yeah, it was interesting talking to Alec, because he said that his guy, when he was made to go away and do this, he was, I think, a little bit miffed about it originally, but he went away and did it and said afterwards, actually, that was a very worthwhile thing to do when he did turn professional, and it's gone pretty well for him so far that he was, you know, he recognised the value in it.
Mm. Yeah, I can tell you something. I could tell you a little thingy I discussed off before we recorded this with Andy. I mentioned to him about Mark and Paul Ramsey. Paul Ramsey boxed under Paul Denton as a professional, and he ended up a journeyman, as did Mark Ramsey. But when they were amateurs boxing for Small Heath, which was the same amateur club as me, they were top amateurs, both senior ABA champions, both boxed for Young England and senior. Mark boxed Costasu in the World Championships. You know, he was both senior ABA champions. And when they did a video on how you teaching boxing, the England thing, the footwork they used on the video was Paul Ramsey. You know, these were two top England internationals as amateurs, travelled the world, boxed in tournaments, all the rest of it. So, but, you know, they turned professional. You know, they didn't leave Birmingham. There was, at the time, there was probably really no one in Birmingham, except, well, what was the Lynches? Maybe they, I don't know why they didn't go with them, but they ended up probably, I think Pat, that was it, Pat Benson, my club coach, was good mates with Brendan Ingle. So he brought them up to Brendan Ingle. Yeah. So they signed over with Brendan Ingle, managerial contracts, but they never left Birmingham and moved up to Sheffield. So they just stayed training with the amateurs at Small League Boxing Club with their amateur coaches. And then you know, the Ingles would just do their corner on a night. So I suppose the Ingles only put in what they put in. They never went up there, so they probably didn't spend the time. So anyway, they got a few wins, whatever. And anyway, got beaten in fights they probably shouldn't have got beaten in, or took a short notice, or whatever the reason was. But they get a loss and they get a second loss. You know, now they're not boxing, they're not on TV, they're not earning big money. Do you know what I mean? These guys aren't earning big money at the time. And then before you know it, they're at Nobby Nobsies. But even at that, when they were at Nobby's, they were dangerous journeymen. I wouldn't even call them journeymen. They still hadn't quite gone into journeyman mode. They were, like you said, we said before, these were people that all their lives were used to winning. A man that has achieved that much in amateur boxing as they did has got ego, he's got pride. You know, no matter how much he's parked his pride along the way, that pride can resurface on any given night in front of loads of people where a man throwing shots at you, banging you, and you think, you're trying to, you know, he could have given him a bit of attitude in the ring walk, in the introduction, and he might have thought, what, you think you can do that to me? He could have easily, that man that's been a successful amateur boxer, that's won titles, that's boxed for England, that's got enough pride like that, he could easily think that on any given night.
Yeah.
Maybe even hit him on the break. He could think that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So they stayed springing. They stayed at a certain level of a journeyman for quite a long time and probably took a lot of punishment because of it as well. Because they got involved. They did take fights at 48 hours notice, gave away X amount of pounds because they think, well, he ain't that good. I can tuck up and get through it. Or if he's not that good, I might spring the upset. So they ended up in fights where they took a lot of damage. Do you know what I mean? But like, I remember Paul Ramsey. I remember Mark Ramsey boxing Ricky Hatton, because I knew Ricky Hatton was. He was about 4 years older than me. And when he was in the junior ABAs, I remember going down there with Small Heath, and everyone was talking about this guy, Richard Hatton. And I didn't know who he was. I'd never heard of him until this day, but everyone was raving about him. Anyway, banged this geezer out in about 30 seconds in his fight. Done the same in the junior ABA final. So we followed him. We went to the World Juniors, won the senior ABA's first year, and we followed him. So followed him all the way through. So he was about 5-0, and they matched him with Mark Ramsey. Now, nobody was 5-0 was fighting Mark Ramsey at that time. Do you know what I mean? Mark Ramsey probably could have possibly beaten the British champion on his night at that time. So no one at 5-0 was fighting Mark Ramsey. Anyway, Ricky Hatton boxed him, dropped him twice, won on points, but dropped him twice. Because I remember when there was no internet or nothing, or not even internet, but there was no, you know, mobiles or anything like that, or Twitter or anything. You know what I mean? You only got the results like when I went to the gym and you seen Paul Ram, you know, and he said, oh, how did Mark get on or whatever? And he goes, nah, he got beat, got put down twice. And he was like shocked. Yeah, you know, I told you that Hatton was good. And he was like, not just shocked, pissed off. You know what I mean? So anyway, a few weeks pass, he gets a few more wins, Hatton, and he gets the phone call, Paul Ramsey does, Paul Denton as a pro. And I remember him calling up the gym saying, oh, they've offered me a fight, that fight with Hatton. I said, oh, are you going to take it? He said, I'll take it, but I want a few weeks notice. So they got a few weeks notice, and it was that 10, I think it was 10 stone, 1.5, something like that. And anyway, it goes down, and so we had a few weeks notice, and he ticked over anyway. Do you know what I mean? He did tick over, but like, it wouldn't have been training, like getting up at 6 a.m. or anything like that. But he'd gone to the gym every night and done, you know, 4 or 5 bags or something. Do you know what I mean? A few shadows, a bit of skipping. So they stayed in relative shape. So anyway, this fight comes along, obviously. And I know that same night, my mate goes to him, comes in. I go, "Ah, oh, Paul's boxing, been offered the Hatton fight. He's going to, he's boxing Hatton." And my mate's going to him, "Oh, fuck yeah, he's lethal, he's." And about Hatton, and Paul Ramsey's going, "Yeah, I'm fucking lethal too." You know what I mean? Anyway, obviously, Ricky fought him and stopped him, didn't he? I think six rounds, stopped him in the sixth, got a cut. But, you know, that was a torrid six rounds for Ricky Hatton. Like, he did, Ricky won all the rounds. But Paul, I remember Paul just missing with an uppercut. He nearly hit the fucking lights.
But even
he hit Ricky Hatton with that uppercut, it was a proper Hayuking. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He weren't just surviving. He was throwing punches with bad intentions. He wanted to win. So, you know, that was a book. But you need people like that, because as much as if you're a promoter, a matchmaker, you want your prospect winning the fight, obviously. But at the same time, if we're not going to keep investing money in this kid just to get him to a padded 20-year note to find out he can't fucking fight, that's a complete waste of investment. You know what I mean? This is a top kid. He's done this as an amateur. We've given him a good deal. We're paying him a lot of money. We want to make sure our fucking money's being justified along the way. And every now and then, like, we're building him steady, but every now and then we want to just check. Are we still, is this right here? Is this where he's at? Or can we move him quicker? Is he ready for titles now? All right, fucking hell, he's chinning everyone. He's stopping them. Let's step him up. So people like the Ramses, call them a journeyman at that stage, wouldn't be accurate. They were gatekeepers to a certain level, to the next level, right? Do you know what I mean? But later on in their career, they became journeymen.
Yeah, let's bring Poochie in here, because you're nodding along to what Matt was saying there, Poochie. And looking at your record, what I find interesting, and I see this quite a lot, is that by the look of it, you started in the home corner, won three of your first four, and then you switched to the away corner. Now, Matt was talking about pride there and fighters who will still want to win, and you want to get a win whenever you can get one. But the other side to that coin, and Rich touched on it earlier on, is that you want work. You want to fight as much as you can, which means that you have to kind of square your pride with the fact that you're not really supposed to win. And that, for a highly competitive person, which you definitely are, how do you make that adjustment?
Well, I turned pro. I won my first, I won my debut. I just scraped by. It was quite. I probably got the home decision, if I'm being perfectly honest with myself. A draw would have been fair. Then I lost my second fight. That's a really, really bad night at the office. I was still quite raw as a pro at this point. I lost my second fight, and then I took a late notice fight up in London. It's the first fight that Rich done my corner for. Actually, it was my third fight, and. I won. I boxed Cadell off. I battled him. I probably should have stopped him, but I won every round. And then I was like, why am I running around like a blue ass fly, trying to sell tickets when I can just rock up at the York Hall on a Saturday and fight? So that's when I said to Keith Mayo, who was managing me at the time. I said, I'm not going to do many home shows. If the phone rings, take them. But I'm not a journeyman. I'm not a journeyman. I can't emphasize this enough. I'm not a journeyman. I'm coming to win. So at this point, I'm 2-1. So I've got a good record on paper, but I've lost the fight. So there's vulnerabilities there, and people will take the fight. But then I get on the wrong end of the decision a couple of times, and I was getting a bit disheartened. And then I got a phone call, I think about 10 days notice, to fight Curtis Woodhouse at the Hull Ice Arena on a matchroom show. This is my big break. Like, this is where I roll the dice now. So if I can win this fight or get something out of it, then I might be able to push on if everything goes my way and if I start living the lifestyle properly and all that sort of stuff. If I don't win it, my stock rises, I put up a good fight, then we go on the journeyman route and then we go from there. Obviously, as the fight turned out, I ended up losing that on points, but I made a good account of myself. Probably won the first two or three rounds, cut him. It was a cash event, but my guy Alexander called it a punch, so I'll take that. But but he put me down in the fifth round with a cracking body shot. But I just showed that I've got a lot of heart. I got up and I managed to get myself, fiddle myself for the sixth round, and my stock rose from that. And that's where I thought, I'm a journeyman now. But it probably wasn't until my eighth fight. It wasn't until my tenth fight But I turned up thinking, I'm a journeyman. I'm just here to get through this fight now. So, and then ever since my 10th fight, that's been my mentality until fairly recently, really.
Rich, from your side, when you're looking after an away corner fighter, as discussed, they're still competitive. He's still, you know, particularly recently, he wants to win. And how do you go about deciding? There must be some fights that you turn down, is the short question I could ask. Because yeah. I remember sitting next to the pair of you at York Court probably about 4 years ago. I'm sat on the left, Pucci's in the middle, you're on the right-hand side. And I think Buatsi hadn't long-term pro. And Pucci, you turned around to me and just said, I wouldn't mind a crack at that Buatsi, you know. And just over your shoulder, Rich just shook his head at me as if to say, I'm not letting that happen. Because he, you know, these lads will fight anyone, won't they? And you've got to, the juice of air is with you.
Yeah, but look, at the end of the day, Pooch, and he won't mind me saying this, would be his own worst enemy if probably didn't have me to manage him, because he will fight anybody, like literally anyone. And he did it once. And I don't think you ever did this again, Pooch, did you? When he volunteered himself to fight Joe Pickford. And now, bearing in mind, Joe Pickford was a good couple of weights lower than what Pooch is. And I went, no fucking way. He went, man, that'd be fine, but he's going to be at middleweight. I went, absolutely fucking not. No, I'm fighting him. I'm doing it. I'm doing this. Mate, he's dangerous. He ain't going to be as big punch as what he is at welterweight. I went, he is. Trust me, I'd had him in the gym sparring Kelvin Young at the time. Anyway, we ran with it and didn't work out too well, did it, Pooch?
Well, I volunteered myself late notice and cut a lot of weight. So it was hard to give a proper parameter on that fight, but he did crack hard. He didn't knock me out, but the referee found a way to stop it quickly. I think it was at the end of the first round, and the ref was like,
yeah, you sat against the ropes, and I remember you looked at me and just kind of shook your head.
I cut too much weight too quickly.
Yeah.
I knew now how to cut weight, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. and that was the thing, that's what I mean. He's one of the bravest men you'll ever meet. He won't say no to anybody. But it needs me at times, like you say, on the Buatsi thing, that's me at the times that puts the sensor wedge on for him. We don't need that work, you know. And we've been there a few times, you know, certainly in the early days, we used to get offered quite a lot of fights on the Matchroom shows and Frank Warren shows and that. And like 99% of the time, you're getting in with highly skilled like killers. And like when you've been there a few times and you realise that, you realise also, you don't need that work. You know, we can go on a small all show and earn the same money and have a much, much easier night. You don't need to be in front of a camera in a stadium or whatever. You know, so you've got to pick your fight.
Mark Ramsey, Paul Ramsey, Howard Clark boxed all Frank Warren. You know, it was Frank Warren back in the day, wasn't it, with my time. On the television shows, Frank Warren Prospects, you know, and Barry Hearn, not on Matchroom. So those are the two on TV. You've seen Paul Ramsey, you've seen Mark and Paul, and you've seen Howard Clark on there quite a lot, boxing Frank's prospects. And you've seen them spring the odd upset, do you know what I mean? But you've also seen Brian Coleman and Peter Buckley. In fact, you've seen them more often. You've seen them on every single show because they'd only put the prospects in with Mark and Paul and Howard Clark when they're at a certain level. Do you know what I mean? Well, you give Peter Buckley their pro debut a lot of the time. Wait a second, because Peter Buck, and by the way, I remember being in the gym years ago, and I remember I was still boxing amateur. Buckley was very much, he was on telly every week, do you know what I mean, in the away corner. And I remember seeing a poster of Peter Buckley in one of the gyms about a show at the Tower Ballroom. I think he was topping the bill, or it wasn't top, he might not be topping the bill, he was maybe... But he was featured on the card anyway, and he was up-and-coming prospect, 8-0. Do you know what I mean? So somewhere down the line, Peter Buckley had ambitions of where he could... But once he realised he wasn't going to get, you know, and he got a few losses, and then he probably realised, actually, I can make a few quid here, and I can box every week, and these prospects aren't that good. Some of them are, you know, and I'll just survive. If they, you know, if I can nick a win here and there, I will. If not, I'll just survive. And... Yeah. So he learned how to survive. Do you know, he didn't take beatings. Buckley didn't. Do you know what I mean? Because he'd surrendered to that position, to his role. But and I'd say, you know, and Howard Clark too. They were good amateurs. Do you know what I mean? They would have won a lot. Well, Mark, I remember Rob McCracken saying to me when I was still amateur about turning professional, we were talking about it, and he said to me, he goes, you know, he was trying to explain, it's hard, it's different. He said, I thought Paul Ramsey was going to be a professional world champion. When he was boxing for Young England, he was knocking people out. He said he was made for the pros, and he didn't, and he didn't do it. So he was telling me, you know, how hard it is and that and everything. But, you know, what I'm saying is, Paul was an achiever. He was a winner. Do you know what I mean? And Mark, they found it hard losing, even though they were taking these fights. They knew the role, they knew the gig, but they wouldn't have liked losing. Do you know what I mean?
Like what we were saying though about getting on to certain opponents at certain stages and like skill sets that Pooch has. I mean, when you go through like his box, you can see who he's for. I mean, fairly recently during lockdown, we didn't actually get a lot of work, but we did get a call for one, and that was Carol Atuma. Now, I think Atuma just come away with a gold medal from the Junior Olympics. Didn't know a huge amount about him. And I was probably a little bit more nervous about that fight than what Pooch was. But he's like, don't worry about it. And as it happened, when I got to the hotel, I tested positive for COVID. So I had to be sent home. So I had to watch it on TV. And it was, obviously, it's the Tumor's debut. And watching it on TV, Pooch made it look easy. And then you look at what Carol's done since. I think he's virtually knocked everybody out since. Do you know what I mean? And like, Pooch made that look an easy night's work. We had another one, Shaquille Thompson. He was being dangerous. We took the fight, made it look easy. We took the fight last minute on the Friday to go and fight John Doherty. And this is when I think Doc had knocked everybody out apart from Daryl Sharp.
I remember that. I remember thinking that was a big shout because the Doc could whack and he just loved punching people.
And he did. He whacked and caught Pooch with a good one in the first round, but then it didn't. I think it might have buzzed you a little bit, but it didn't hurt her, Pooch. And then after that, he actually made it look again quite easy. And in fact, I think it was like the fifth or sixth round, Pooch whacked John a few times with some shots, and we know the Doc was good. And who was the other geezer that it was a Frank Warren show, really tall fella.
Shiraz, not Hamza Shiraz.
Umar Sadiq, another one, didn't know anything about him. And he came out and he looked like 7 foot tall. Pooch got a real funny picture of like Sadiq, like just towering above him after the fight. And again, during that fight, I'm watching that fight and like there's a massive size difference. And somehow Pooch couldn't miss him with an overhand right. And he kept landing. Again, he made it look easy. And you know, and these guys, I think Sadiq went to fight for the British title against Zach Chelly. And you know, a lot of these guys have gone on to like achieve a lot. And like Pooch's, where the skill set comes in, you know, there are certain fights that we took where you kind of think, and he's performed absolutely superb. And then you'll get the odd name that gets thrown out. Oh, defense. So I remember Eddie Muscat. He tried matching Pooch through me with Denzel Bentley so many times. Pooch would be fine with it. I'm like, mate, he's like 6-0 and knocked everybody out. But Pooch, no, I'm not having it. And next month, Pooch, want to go and fight Denzel Bentley? He's now 9-0 with 9 knockouts. No, mate, we're not taking that word 4 or 5 times, isn't it? And then look what he's just gone and done the other week. It's just like, that's why we never go in the ring with Denzel Bentley. Because, you know, you got to know the game as well. Because, you know, like I say, Pooch would have gone, I'll fight him. But that's when you need...
And it's miles on the clock, isn't it? We mentioned it about the unlicensed boxing there and amateur boxing. Boxing's fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen boxers, I've seen journeymen who had hard fights, you know, who are beat up now. They've took a lot of stick. You know, it's real, isn't it? The damage that boxing does. Do you know what I mean? So, like, what's the point going boxing someone way out your depth who's going to absolutely knock fucking lumps out of you? You know, I'm not that desperate for 1,500 quid either. Do you know what I mean? You want to make money and you want to take these fights and you know, if you can nick a win, you'll nick a win and you'll be competitive. If you know you're out your depth and he's a good boxer, you'll tuck up and survive and get through it. But you're not going to throw your kid in there against someone who's a fucking killer.
Exactly. And that's just it. And it's a case of like, I mean, we had discussion a few years back, and like Pooch understood, it's because of, we don't need that fight, because guarantee my phone will ring for the same night for a small hall show for a lad that's like two and one, you know, like, wow.
Pikachu fights, don't you?
Yeah, you have to, because that's the only way. That's why he's 175.
Longevity. You got longevity.
Yeah, and that's why he's 175, and he's got all his faculties. You know, exactly. he's absolutely fine.
That's why he did have air when we started.
That's why it has to be that partnership, because if you're taking an away corner fighter, if you're taking a fighter on the road, like, you lads need to know more than anyone else, really, because people will look to try and take advantage of you. You need to know everything about every opponent, every manager, every promoter, every matchmaker, everything. Pooch, just like you, so you've taken a fight. You and Rich have agreed that this is a good fight for you to take. It's a suitable opponent. You know, when that first bell goes, is it fair to say that that opening round is pretty crucial in determining what you're going to try and do? Will you have a look in that opening round? And if they're really sharp and good and on point, you'll think to yourself, like last night, okay, this is probably one of those nights where I won't be a hero. I'll just get through it. Other times you might see something and think, okay, I can, you know, maybe this might be a night where I'll win.
I suppose so. You can normally tell in the first round, or at least in the first minute of the first round, what the sort of tail of the fight's going to be. Like, especially with the amount of experience I've got now, there's 9 out of 10 I've seen it all before. So you can sort of think back to your prior experience and call up on that. But generally, you can sort of figure out how these guys are going to fight. Most people fight in a rhythm. If they've got a favorite combination that they'll put together. But usually, it's just have a little look at them, see what their rhythm is, see what their favorite shots are, see where they do carry power, if they carry power, and if they're sharp. Like you said last night, the kiddie was a level above me from the opening seconds of the fight. So I was like, head on, stay sharp, stay switched on, just watch what's coming my way, and just focus on my defense and try and catch him where I can. But then again, like you was there for Bradley Cousins fight, and I went into that fight with a good mindset. I knew I'd probably had the beating of him, but again, as took it to the first round, I just put the pressure on him to see how he dealt with the pressure, and it turns out he didn't really deal with it very well, and he sort of got a bit frantic, and that's why I knew I had the beating of him. So I just up my work rate, because I've been in the gym myself recently, and like I said, just a bit more healthy with my lifestyle. I knew I had the gas tank to do it myself, so I just drowned him is probably a good phrase to use, and then took him into deep waters and drowned him.
What's the latest? What's the very latest notice you've had for a fight, do you reckon?
For me, it was the John Doherty fight. I was working as a lift engineer at the time, and I was meant to be fighting Liverpool. So I rang Rich and said, "What time are we weighing in tomorrow in Liverpool?" Because I'll just ring so and so and see what time it's starting. He rings me back and goes, they pulled out weeks ago, and no one told us about it. I was like, forget it, I'll have a week off. I could do a week off anyway. So driving home, stop at Burger King. I was planning my first pint when I get back to Bristol. So when am I going to have, when am I going to go? And then he goes, whatever you're doing, stop it. We're on the plane first thing in the morning. We're going to Newcastle. You're stepping in against Doherty.
When I got told that this fight in Liverpool pulled off, nobody bothered said anything, and I just dropped a couple of messages. I dropped one to I can't remember who it was now, Matchroom at the time, and the Matchroom one came back to me immediately, and your time is impeccable, because John was supposed to be fighting, I think it was Ryan Kelly,
Ryan Aston,
and he was on the scales when the border control rang them and said, get him off the scales now. He's failed his brain scan. So literally weighed him in off the scales. As that happened, my text message had gone through, and they rang me straight and went, how quick can you get to Newcastle? I've got a fight for you. And then we negotiated the person being last minute or whatever. And then I've got hold of Pooch straight away and said, we've got to get back. We've got to get on a plane. we've got to be in Newcastle tomorrow morning. So we got on a plane and flew up and got, so yeah, it was literally 24 hours, probably just less than 24 hours.
No, less than that. But there, I know stories, like Johnny Greaves has got a good one where he's turned Indian. Up the screen to watch or do someone's corner or something back in the day. Promoters ran out. Oh my God, have you got your shorts? He goes, no, but I remember missing. She'll bring him down. And then she gets down, gets changed, gets in the ring. That's how short a notice you can get for the away corner. Sometimes you can get months. Sometimes you can get a couple of hours. And there's literally no contrast. As well as like the no contrasting is one I use a lot when I'm talking about the away corner. Is one weekend you're in the O2 Arena on an Anthony Joshua undercard. The week after you're in an abandoned rugby club in Hull. Do you know what I mean?
So we've been there.
There's literally no contrast into being in the away corner. It's a funny old place to be, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I remember the first main event I did for Sky was Anthony Carolla, Derry Matthews in Oldham, and Sid Razak was on the card. Well, I didn't think he was, and I was quite nervous about the whole thing anyway, and I'd kind of been obsessing about this card for weeks. And I got there on the night and I see Sid Razak and immediately just think, what the fuck are you doing here? You're not supposed to be on this card. You know, and I had a panic. Yeah. And it turned out that he was at a wedding reception around Birmingham where he's from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, got a call. Someone's pulled out. Can you come? He had his kit in the boot, drove up there, put him on first at about 5 o'clock. Peter Buckley cornering him, did the four rounds, went home and pretty much just picked up his drink where he left it. You know, it was, you know, I love that stuff. I absolutely love it.
I used to spar Sid Razak all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Every night when I was 14, 60 kilo. And then Seamus, my brother, sparred him years after when he was gonna turn pro. He didn't in the end, but Sid was tough, man.
He was just finishing as I was starting. So yeah. I sort of caught up. I was in the pro circles before, like years before I turned pro, because a friend of mine from Lydney, where I grew up, Chris Higgs was a pro, and so Sid Razak was on the circuit then. So I used to knock about with Sid, Dee Mitchell, Daniel.
All those sort of guys, I sort of
figured out what the other side of the corner was, the other side of boxing was when I was learning about the pro game.
It's funny, you know, because Dean Mitchell was, when I left Billy Graham and I had a couple of camps with Buddy McGurr out in Florida, you know, from a cost point of view, it wasn't really stacking up for the time and everything and the fights I was at and what I was earning. So I thought, I'll try Birmingham, you know. So I went up to Richie's to do a fight with Richie Woodall. The first fight, Richie was away in Beijing. He just come back the week before and did the corner. But then the next fight, we did a camp. So I was training with all those guys, you know, like Dee Mitchell and all them. And I sparred with Dee. I remember thinking he had more ability than what he used to show on the night. Do you know what I mean? I used to remember saying to Jan Pig, you know, Dee's all right. Like, he's got talent. Do you know what I mean? We sparred. He was pretty good. And I don't know, on the night of the fight, we were a different person. And John used to say, he said, if we could only do in the ring what he does in the gym, he said, but I don't know what it is. He just goes down so many levels.
It's the away corner mentality. It takes over you in the end. Once you figure out how the sport works, it just gets a bit draining. You just end up just falling into that routine of you just turn up every week. Do bare minimum. I did the bare minimum for years. Rich used to bollock me in the corner. Come on, help your work rate, do something. But I just couldn't bother. that was the long and short of it. I couldn't be bothered.
So, Rich, I'm interested to know what it's like when you get that late call for a big show, like the Doherty one. It will have happened to you on other occasions, I'm sure, because again, this is a point where, you know, you need someone like you or John Pegg or one of the other guys who they know what the crack is, because the big promoter with the TV show, and this isn't a criticism of them, it's just how the world works. They will want you to do what they want you to do. It's as simple as that. And what you've got to make sure is that you don't have a situation where you get their way in, if the opponent weighs in and it turns out he's a stone heavier than you and they just haven't told you. And then there's money and there's all sorts of things. Well, so It's not just, yeah. It's not the manna from heaven, it might appear to be, getting the call from Eddie to go and save the day on the Matchroom show. It's got to be right.
Yeah, it has got to be right. I mean, this one, I've never ever taken a fight without speaking to Pooch or any of the other fighters, and also letting them know what the purse was. They offered us good money for the Doherty fight being last minute as well. But also, where I've been, I've been in the game quite a long time now, you know, so over 10 years. And it's to the point where it happened to us the other week, to be honest with you, when Pooch, we were matched with a lad at, I can't remember what weight it was, say 12-8 or something else like that. And they changed the fight week. Somebody pulled out, gave us a new fight, agreed the weight, had it in text. And this kid, he weighed in at sort of 13-2, 13-4. And literally I stood there and went, absolutely fucking not, no, ain't happening. No, we all went into panic. I said, well, at this moment in time, you're either going to pay us X amount or just give us our expenses and X amount and we go home and you lose a fight. And like lots of more inexperienced, I would say, sort of people wouldn't kind of do that, wouldn't have the ball. I have no problem with doing that. It would turn up if the terms and everything turned right against us and they try to decision us, quite happy, we'll get in the car and we're going, don't care, you lose a fight. And everything else like that. Now, that kid stole a shitload of tickets. You know, we just weighed in at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. You're very unlikely to get an opponent at this stage, especially nowadays, and do that. So I'm in a car. We'll turn around and go home. Look, we've never had to do that. But it's a case of that's it. If you have to dig your feet in, because otherwise, again, it's the health and the safety of your fighter. And if the other aspects start coming in that are weighing even more against you, you're either getting compensated financially or you get in that car and you go home because it's just not worth it. I mean, we had a very weird experience a few years ago, and we actually ended up, Pooch fought him recently in September and stopped him out. It's Derek Renfrew. So we turned up. It was a Robert Lloyd Taylor show in, was it High Wycombe or Beaconsfield or somewhere?
Maidenhead, I thought, or something
like that. Yeah, it might be Maidenhead. So we turned up. The fight was agreed. We got told it was a six-rounder. Weigh agreed after. We turned up quite oddly because I think we got caught in traffic and we were a little bit late for the weigh-in. The kid sat in the weighing room waiting for us. Like, oh, thank God you've turned up, blah, blah, blah. We didn't think you was going to come. So don't worry about that. So we weighed and everything's okay. We've gone out to have a look at the ring and we end up chatting to an inspector. And one of the inspectors said, oh, yeah, we were on first or second. And he said, it's a four-rounder. Well, it's a six. And he said, we got it down from the board. It's four rounds. And we're like, I'm not worried about that. You know, Robert's, he was there. He said, no, we'll still pay you the 6-round money. It's absolutely fine. But this kid, our opponent, just lost the plot. Just couldn't handle it. Threw every toy out of the pram. Refused to fight. He said, I'm not going to fight a four-rounder. It's a 6-rounder or nothing. You're like, we might as well do a four. You've got to fight this and never. And he left the venue. Him and his parents and that, they just walked out the venue. And we were like, shell-shocked. You're like, what's going on?
So did you get paid then?
Yeah, well, yeah. Robert Lloyd Taylor, Diamond of Abgeezy, paid us full purse. No questions whatsoever, full purse. We went home, we drove back to Swindon and went, the Nielsen's had a Swindon show. We went and just watched other boxing that night.
Yeah, had a walk on that as well.
But that was the easiest. That was the easiest night's work you ever had.
It really was.
He's an asshole, that's for sure.
And then ironically, I took a fight for Pooch at the beginning of September against Ed Renfrew, and Pooch just beat the hell out of him and stopped him in the fifth round.
Knocked him out in the fifth round.
So it was,
Pooch. I'm wondering, what amateur club did you box for?
So I boxed for Lydney Boxing Club in the Forest of Dean.
And you still train there now?
No, I moved out of Lydney a long time ago. I trained there just to go over there when I first turned over. But I trained out of St. Joseph's, Newport, Tony Borg, for a bit. And then that's when I met Rich shortly after. I've just been hopping about ever since.
So what did you do? What kind of training do you do now?
I just take over.
You train every day?
Yeah, well, lately I have been. I've been, like I said earlier, I've turned over like a bit of a, just started being a bit better with consistency in the gym. Just sort of run on the treadmill or go out for a run, skip, hit the bag, do some groundwork. Pretty usual stuff, but nothing too intricate. Just
would you hit the bags every day?
not I try not to every day, especially these days. I've had some problems with my shoulders.
Box one day, run one day, that type of thing.
Yeah, just trying to stagger it, just keep myself interested, because I get tedium with training. I've fallen in and out of love with boxing loads of times. Yeah. And a lot of it's to do with the training, because I get tedious.
So I'm just curious, wondering, you're doing your boxing quite regularly, so you're quite fit anyway. I'm just curious what kind of training you did.
I've actually joined like a hit place. It's called Tribe. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're really good. They're like 45-minute hit, and it's all about keeping you in the sweat zone for 45 minutes. It's really good. And it's so much better than just punching a punch bag on my own for half an hour. Yeah, and I sweat 10 times more. So I really enjoy doing that.
Okay, so we won't keep you lads too much longer. We could easily do another one of these. One of these in person with you two would be great. But I know that you're not looking to go on forever. I think maybe until the summer. Last time I saw you, and you would be keen to finish with a bit of a flourish. You put a few wins together recently, and if you could get a few more together, what are your chances of the board putting you in for an area title fight, for example? Because I mean, that would be, you know, that would be a great way to go out, wouldn't it? Get a British Boxing Board of Control sanctioned title. And it's something that a lot of, you know, the really good level away corner fighters, some of them have managed to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been sanctioned for it now. If I want to take the fight tomorrow, I can. I've been sanctioned, all the paperwork's done. But for me, it's a bit of a rock and a hard place situation, because I've got, what month is it now? I've got like 6-7 months left on my medical. My medical expires on the 24th of June. That'll be the last day I'll ever fight. So between then and now, if I fight for the Southern Area in December or February, I've still got all these months left on my medical. So let's say I hypothetically go and win that title. No one's going to fight me. The only people that are going to fight me is the big lads on the side with the big promoters, or the hidden gems, or the diamonds in the rough, who are going to be absolute monsters and go on to massive title contention. Or I lose that fight, but put up a good fight, my stock rises. People are going, oh, he's just fought the Southern Area. He's 10-round fit. I don't want to fight him. I know he's tough. But if I don't do that, I keep on being a journeyman and playing the game for a few more months, then great. I'm going to earn some more money. I'm going to keep relevant. I'm going to get as many fights as I can up until I finish in June. And then maybe, I've not decided yet, maybe I have a late surge towards it, maybe April, May next year, and go again next year. But for now, I'm not really interested, unless it's late notice big money fight comes in for it.
Rich, what about you? What's are you formulating a plan of any kind?
I, like Pooch said, we've been offered a few of these already recently, especially after his recent form. And like we chat with, and I'm with Pooch, right now it'd be a poison chalice. I mean, it's difficult enough to try and get a fight for him when he's just winning on four rounders and six rounders. If he was to get the Southern Area and win it, we just might as well just throw the diary in the bin, because we're going to get a phone call to be an away fighter. He's going to be a prime target for some of these killers that are out there. And if he does 10 rounds and he puts up a good fight and he loses it on points, like you say, you know, the lads that are making debuts or 2-0, 3-0, 5-0 or whatever, they can look at it and go, hell no, you should put up a great fight in a 10-round fight. We don't want any of that. You know, it's, I mean, we had it fairly recently. I had a fight agreed on back in early September for the first week of October. Pooch puts the wins together and they blatantly turn around and say, find us another opponent, don't want to fight him, he's winning. And we're like, sorry? And they pulled the kid out of the show. We lost the show, we lost money, because the coach, don't think it was the boxer, the coach didn't want to put his lad in with Pooch because Pooch was winning. Now, I don't think that they should have a license if they're pretending to do that. Didn't even lie, say he's ill, or he just turned around and said, no, Pooch is on a roll at me, he's having a go, don't want my lad in with him. Well, sorry, you should be a boxer then, should you? Especially professionally, if that's the case. That's ridiculous. So I'm with Pooch. You know, at the end of the day, yeah, formulate a plan towards the end of the career. You know, sort of May time. If Pooch fancies having a go, see where we're at, see if we get sanctioned for it. See who's potentially got the title, either at super middle or light heavy, and then maybe make a pay for it to go out on a high. But I'm
that would be my hat and Costa Zoo night.
Yeah, well, we'll come to that. If you can do that, that would be tremendous. And
we're putting a training camp for that one. Might even do some sparring.
Matt, it's interesting from our side, isn't it? Because, you know, we know how it works. We know that when we see one of the away corner lads pull out a big win, that their phone's going to stop ringing, and that ultimately, financially, it's probably not the best thing for them. But you still love to see it, don't you? Because it's just, you know, this is sport, isn't it? This is sport at the end of the day. And the best fighter on the night should win.
Yeah, and not necessarily stop ringing either. Do you know what I mean? They might just think, all right, that prospect weren't that good because such and such one beat him. You know what I mean? So maybe we had a bad night. Maybe we try and get him a couple more wins and we'll give him another go at him. You know, they need people that are willing to step in at short notice, people that are willing to fight people who on paper they look out their depth against, journeymen, away corner fighters. We need them. Boxing needs them. If you didn't have them, boxing wouldn't last. How'd you bring the prospect through? Do you know what I mean? How'd you create a start? You need to, and you need them at different levels. Do you know what I mean? You need them at different levels as well. So I don't know. I don't think that the phone would stop ringing. I just think they'd adjust how they use him. What level they match their. All right, he's not your first couple of fights. Journeyman, he's someone when you're about 8-0 and you've got, you found your feet a little bit, maybe. So that's what I think would happen.
That's what's happened to me this weekend, where I had a couple of lads who are probably not at the level the kid I'm fought at this weekend. They've all pulled out, but this kid fancies himself, his team fancy him, and he's obviously at another level, and he's absolutely picked me apart. So that's the only fuzz I've got at the moment in the pipeline. I've got another tough one this weekend, I think. Josh Clark, his name is. He's stopped a couple recently, so he'd be trying to prove a point, so I have to have be on my game again. So,
and I suppose your manager's job is to kind of ask around. If it is someone you haven't heard of, he'll have his contacts. Have you heard of this kid? Is he any good?
I don't think I've got anything to worry about with him. Anything to worry about too much, but I think he's on a bit of a roll himself, so he'll be a bit between his teeth. So I'll just have to. I have to just turn up this time. I didn't really turn up last night either. I was felt a bit flat yesterday. So taking nothing away from Andre, by the way, but I wasn't myself last night. And to go in against someone at that sort of level, when I wasn't really feeling myself, was a bit, like I said, Rich's analogy, a poison chalice.
Yeah, okay, chaps. Do you know what? Obviously, we all know John Pegg. We know John Pegg very well. And Peggy's always said to Pooch and I, that he'll match any of his lads with Pooch at the stages they're at. And he's always turned around and said, if they can't beat Pooch, then they know where they're at in their career going forward. So he's never, ever had an issue with putting Pooch in with any of his lads, because he's always told his lads, if you can't beat Pooch, then you know where you're at in your own career at that moment in time. And, you know, you just kind of wish that other managers and promoters had that same sort of thought pattern, like what Matt was alluding to earlier. Rather than padding their record out for 10-15 wins, then come against someone, even in a 50-50 fight, and they get found out. You know, we see that happening all the time. And it's so that kind of attitude is just a shame. Like, more managers and promoters don't have that attitude.
Do you know what I think happens there? It's when they get someone who sells loads of tickets, is really popular, and they know they can't fight very well. So they'll keep trying to keep them unbeaten because they want the journey to keep going because they're selling loads of tickets.
Yeah, but we had that though, Matt, with a Peggy fighter. What was his name? Jordan, the geezer you knocked out in the first round.
Lynch.
Jordan Lynch, yeah. I mean, he was sold about 160 tickets that night, and Peggy was the same. And Jordan's hit Pooch, he was the southpaw, he hit Pooch with a decent shot and thought he hurt him. So we started to unload, and it was the biggest mistake he could have. Pooch just winged over a looping overhand right and just dropped him.
No, I picked up, stepped back and right up in the middle.
Was it a step back one? Yeah, but he dropped him, and like the referee's giving him every possible chance. So I'm looking at Pooch in the neutral corner saying, just don't rush in, just calm down. And then the ref sort of walked towards me, and he stumbled as he walked towards him and let him carry on. And I've looked straight into the corner, nah, let him have everything you got. And he did, and he dropped him a second time. And like, that was it. It was fight was over. But he was a big ticket seller. And he did.
When he was unloading on Pooch, Pooch was thinking, fuck this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's like, this is too much. I'm doing too much work here.
Yeah. The unwritten rule is if you're not going to try and chin me, or you're not going to try and knock me out, you're not going to try and hurt me. I'm quite happy to let you win. But the unwritten rule is if you stop playing the game, I'm going to stop playing the game. And then you've got a bit of a scenario in our hands. And especially if they're not to the level they should be to beat me handily, then they've got a problem.
Now, that's it. You've just described the code there absolutely perfectly, because this is something that is really, as far as I've ever been able to understand, unique to boxing, because in boxing we arrange our own fixtures and you don't find yourself in one league and then you get too good for that league and you move up to the next one. You have to do everything yourself, and that's why away corner fighters are so crucial. But that, like you say, that is the gentleman's agreement that, you know, yeah, if you're not going to take any liberties with me, then we can have a move around. I'll show you a few things. I'll push you hard. You'll come out a better fighter for it. But if you think you're gonna take the piss with me, then you've got a big fucking surprise coming. That's what happens.
I'll give you a quick story. It's quite funny, and I think the lads will relate to this. My second pro fight, right? I'm the live float against Manhattan Rosal. Anyway, I'm looking at down the corridor. I'm thinking, who am I fighting? Because I didn't see him at the weigh-in. This was when not necessarily they weighed in on the day before. You know, like foreign opponents. This is 2001. So I'm thinking, who is he? You know, so I'm looking around, seeing this away corner. But it was the old Wembley Conference Centre. So there was a couple of away corners because they were really small. Anyway, you know, I'm looking at these Russians and that, and there was a lot of East Europeans that time from Fondue. And, you know, they just had Adidas shorts, blue Adidas shorts or whatever, you know what I mean? Or
they just bought them from Sports Direct that afternoon.
Do you know, or whatever. Anyway, I'm seeing, there's a guy across the changing rooms, across the corridor, down a little bit. And he's got, you know, these brand new boxing boots. He's got this dressing gown on. He had a fucking sponsor. I'm thinking, nah, it can't be him. Do you know what I mean? It can't be him. So I'm trying to look out for this name, trying to see who I'm fighting. Anyway, couldn't work it out. Couldn't see anyone. Couldn't match anyone up to the name. Something fucking else. Anyway, we're walking up the steps, and Steve Murray had just boxed, I think it was one of the halls, and he's coming down the steps, and his face is fucking smashed to bits. His nose is over here. He's cut under both eyes. He's bruised everywhere. Do you know what I mean? He's knocked him out, I think, in the fourth round. Steve Murray has. And Steve Murray comes walking past. He's covered in blood, even though he won. I'm walking up the steps. It's my second pro fight. And I'm thinking, I'm thinking, who am I boxing? You know, I think it was Ram Singh in my pro debut. He had those Adidas shorts, you know, the ones the journeyman at that stage are supposed to have. And probably a pair of trainers. Anyway, as I get into the ring, I'm seeing it's the guy who was across the way who had the dressing gown on and he was sponsored. And I'm thinking, fucking hell. I've got the blast of nerves got my stomach. I'm thinking, oh, who am I? Plus, I'd heard so many, like, stories over the years from people like the Ramses. And even when I was training the Lynches and with Spencer McCracken and Roy Rutherford. You know what I mean? I've heard some horror stories about strokes being pulled. So anyway, I'm in there. I knocked him out. It was fine. But do you know what I mean? I remember feeling those nerves when I seen this guy with the shorts coming in and thinking, fucking hell, that's not your normal journeyman. Yeah. It's only been my second pro fight. I've only been one round. So but I'm sure you can relate to it.
Yeah, big time.
Philip Fondue, I remember him. Them were the days when he used to bring some of the lads over. He'd bring some tricky lads over, wouldn't he?
Yeah, definitely. Like you know, because back then as well, before Box Wreck and that, it was harder to find out who certain people were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was almost impossible. You had to know people and they had to give you the information, and not everybody wanted to share that information.
Oh, no, you hear some amazing stories from back in the day from America as well, where people would use aliases, boxing different states. Bruce Strauss, he was famous for it. There's one famous story. I don't know whether it's apocryphal or not, but he ended up booking himself to fight against himself. Because the promoter, you know, that was, he'd forgotten that he'd agreed to a fight and under what name, and then he got rung to take the fight and he took it. And he turned up at the weigh-in and said, "Where's my opponent?" And they said, "It's this guy." And he just thought to himself, "Oh, fuck, that's me." it's crazy stuff. It's crazy stuff. Listen, we could do this all night. We really could.
I wondered if he make the promoter still pay him his expenses.
Well, I'd have thought so. I'd have thought so.
He weighed in and saw the doc, so he should have got his full weight.
Yeah, I'd imagine he probably did. It's, you know, there's just some great strokes that have been pulled down the years. Well, listen, thanks for doing this, lads. It's been really good fun. And we will definitely do another one. We will check in after the 24th of June and see how things, we'll keep an eye on it, obviously. And we'll see you around, but see how it all finished. Because I mean, there's got to be some kind of film script that we can manufacture here. You've got to go out in the blaze of glory somehow. I mean, that just...
Did John Peck make a film about Journeyman or something?
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. No, he didn't. I think he had something to do with the Paddy Considine.
That's right.
It was a film called Journeyman, but it wasn't about Journeyman. It was about a brain injury.
Yeah, that's right. Paddy Considine.
He did make a film himself, didn't he? With Richard Woodall in it.
Did he? I'm not sure.
I think
it was about Journeyman. I'm sure it was.
He's had Richie in a few. He did have an idea not that long ago, Macklin, actually, to do a kind of a spoof where it was based around a former kind of top fighter making a comeback, and he was going to ask you to do it. But he wasn't going to tell you it was a spoof. He was going to tell you it was a serious
thing. Really, it was a fly on the wall film.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. I've totally fucked it now because I've just spilled the beans, but I don't think anything was ever going to come of it anyway.
Where I played the star role as a cant.
Yes, basically, yeah, that's basically it. John had thought up the whole treatment and everything, and he told me about it one day, and I said, and I did say to him, I said, have you just gone away and kind of like dreamt all this up in your mad head, basically just as this incredibly elaborate ruse just to make Mackling look like a cunt because it'll be funny for the rest of us? And he just said yes, basically.
He loves a wind-up, maybe. He loves a wind-up.
He does. Right. Lads, thanks so much for this. We'll catch you down the road very soon, yeah. I'm sure. And
are you at the Ali Pally? I might come down and watch.
We'll both be there, yeah, on the 27th. Yeah. Okay, excellent. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will catch you again soon, hopefully. We'll get a couple at that show, actually, at the Alexandra Palace show. And then we're not too far away from Christmas, but we'll try and stock a few up between now and Christmas so we can kind of keep going over that period if we can. We've been back 2-3 months now after what was quite an extended break, and we're really enjoying it. So, you know, we'll keep them coming. All right, take it easy, everybody. We'll catch you again next time.
Yes, that line falls on the right, babe. Not that man.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.